You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO, at 100.5 FM.
Palestine is rich in natural resources. There are fields to grow food in and the Mediterranean Sea to fish from. Agriculture remains a foundation of Palestinian life, yet the life in Gaza is under constant threat. The blockade by the Israeli armed forces doesn't allow for goods or services to flow freely in and out of the territory, and there are several restrictions on farming and fishing. Brian Campbell recently visited Gaza as part of a delegation of activists from Vancouver and spoke to farmers and fishers in the region. Brian joins me this morning in the studio. Good morning, Brian. Welcome to Co-op.
Good morning. Thank you.
What did farmers tell you about their day-to-day problems in Gaza?
Well, the main problem is that almost half of their land has been taken out of production, the land that's bordering on the north and the east of Gaza. So they've lost access to a lot of land. And so their production is way down. The farmers that are living in those border areas, their income is diminished considerably. So they're having a very hard time. The vast majority of them are living in poverty. They can't produce food for themselves, and they can't produce food for Palestinians in general. And to top it all off, along those borders, there is a buffer strip which is looked at by Israeli towers, which automatically shoot anybody that comes within 300 meters and sometimes a further distance. So there are a lot of farmers that are wounded, that are risking their lives to go out into the territory. And they, most of the raising of cattle or raising of goats takes place in that area too, so they're not able to do a lot of their livestock.
So it's a choice of the threat of gunfire, the threat of poverty.
That's right. And, you know, we met people that were wounded. We visited this farm just off of the buffer zone, and the home, there were bullet holes all in the walls of the house. And when you went into the children's bedroom, you saw bullet holes in the back of their bedroom. And there was a shed not too far from the house. And they were telling us, the farmers who lived there, that they went out and looked in the shed one day, and one of the farm workers had crawled in there for protection and died in there because he was shot. So there's a lot of people dying in the buffer area. While we were there, one of the towns just behind the buffer area, our translator, we were at a meeting and he was called away, and one of his closest friends and his neighbor were both killed in an attack on the town just beyond the buffer zone in Biat Hanu.
Holy. And you also met with fishers. What's day-to-day life like for fishers from Gaza?
Well, what's happened for the fishers is that they originally had a 20-mile fishing limit. And since 1993, that's been reduced to three nautical miles. So the vast majority of the fishermen are not able to fish any longer. And most of the fish that they caught as their cash crop, sardines, are outside of that 3 nautical miles. So they're not able to, get their cash crop. So they're going out, but most of them have given up fishing. But those that are still able to go out, they go out and they're catching very small fish. We were out in the boats and they'd be coming by showing us what they had been able to catch. And for the most part, they were fairly small ground fish and probably not able to feed their family, let alone feed them.
What happens when a boat gets close to those 3 nautical miles?
Well, the Israeli Navy shoots at the boat or water cannons the people. They force people to stop, Even within the 3 nautical miles, they forced them to stop. So we heard all kinds of stories about fishers were forced to jump out of their boats and swim towards the Israeli Navy boat, but they kept moving the Israeli Navy boat, so the fishers had a hard time getting there. One of the people we met on land, his boat had been taken from him, and he had his knee had been shot up, his boat taken. He was taken to prison in Israel. They released him after a certain amount of time, but kept his boat and forced him to walk back, even though his knee was severely damaged. He's no longer able to walk properly as his knee is damaged. And over again, what you hear is not just that the limit is reinforced, but there's this nastiness and pettiness in terms of the way it's enforced, so that there seems to be a certain amount of pleasure in humiliating people and making it as hard as possible for them, even within the parameters of the siege.
How does what you're describing with the farmers and fishers affect the overall food security in Gaza?
Well, what happens is the Palestinians, the people in Gaza, were pretty much self-reliant in terms of food, and they shipped out many hundreds of tons of strawberries and flowers, which were their major cash crops. Now they can't do that. Israel won't let them through the border into Israel. And they're not able, because almost half the land was either destroyed by Operation Cast Lead or is in the buffer zone, so they're not able to produce sufficient food for the people of Gaza themselves. So food comes in through the tunnels, or food comes in, a little bit of food comes in through Israel, but primarily the majority of people are living in poverty and are dependent on United Nations food supplies. And that includes the majority of fishers and farmers who are no longer able to create the food supplies for themselves and for the Palestinian society.
What is it like eating on food aid for every day of your life in Gaza?
Well, life in Gaza is pretty tension-filled, to the extent that, first of all, you don't have water unless you buy water, because the water plants have been destroyed. So 60% of the water is, in fact, salt water that's seeped into the water supply, into the aquifer. You don't have sewage, so sewage is in the water and on the land. And the food that's provided by the United Nations doesn't really include meat or fresh fruit or vegetables or anything like that. So it's a very limited diet that people have. So altogether, their food supply and their ability to have a robust diet is very low, and a very high percentage of the population suffers from malnutrition, especially children, or food poverty.
What kind of aid does or do the people of Gaza want?
Well, primarily what they want and what they ask us for in terms of our delegation is they want people to bring back the message of what life is like in Gaza. Bring back the idea that Gaza is under siege. The world needs to know about it, and the world needs to do something about it. They want solidarity with their just requirements for social justice in Palestine. So what they want people to do is be aware of their situation and organize to express solidarity.
The new government in Egypt has promised to help or aid Gaza by opening its border crossings. What's happened on that front?
Well, the border crossings are open more than they were, but they're still relatively erratic, and the border crossings only allow people through. The official border crossing only allows people through at Rafah. So that isn't the way the supplies get into Gaza. And it's shut down and it's opened up as people, as the Egyptian government makes the decision. So while we were there, for instance, the Rafah border crossing was closed for 3 days while the Egyptian election was going on. So it's hard for people to be able to make plans. And if it wasn't for the illegal tunnel system, or the tunnel system that Israel characterizes as illegal, then a lot of the supplies, especially for reconstruction, would not be getting into Gaza at all.
And I understand that's how Canadians have to get into Gaza.
Well, the Egyptian government insists that Canadians have a letter from the Canadian embassy to go through the Rafah crossing, or from the United Nations, and the Canadian embassy will not issue such letters. So there is not a way of getting through, for the most part, although some people do, and a lot of people are using the tunnels to get through.
Well, thank you so much for joining us, Brian. Really appreciated hearing about this.
Thank you for giving us the opportunity.
I've been speaking to Brian Campbell. He recently returned from Gaza as part of a delegation from Vancouver. You can learn more about the Day of Action that he just spoke of at vancouver2gaza.org. That's the number 2, vancouver2gaza.org.